Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, July 14th, 2014. And with me today, I have the stunningly brilliant Adam Christensen. How are you, Adam?
Good. How are you doing? Wow, that was quite an intro.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the first time you've been on, and I guess I have to build you up before I knock you down, right? Or something
awesome.
Like that.
Yeah. Something like that. Thank you.
Yeah, and also the equally brilliant, yet in a different way, John Martellaro. How are you, John?
Good morning. I am fine. Good
Excellent.
To be here.
That's exactly as it should be. Okay, so the first story that I thought we'd take a look at today is this report from a financial analyst, and clearly it's Monday because I seem to have lost the capacity to form complete sentences. Wow. Okay, so there's a report that came out from KGI Securities analyst Ming-Chi Kuo or Cao.
I would say Ming-Chi Kuo.
Ming-Chi Kuo.
That's only because I think that's how Ken Ray pronounces it, and I use him as my barometer for all things pronunciation when it comes to names.
Okay, well, there you go. We'll go to the Ken Ray School of Pronunciation, and there you go. All right, so he has a report out where he's saying that through his supply chain sources that Apple is probably not releasing a 5.5-inch iPhone 6 this year, or if they do, it'll be really late in the year, and that instead we'll be seeing just the 4.7-inch model. And while we could sit here and speculate on rumors, I thought it'd be interesting to take a look at what you guys think the implications for Apple would be, assuming that they don't release a 5.5-inch model right away, and if they do like a staggered release.
I think that would be a big problem. That would be a sequencing issue of grave proportions for Apple. The reason is that if they don't announce a 5.5 and people think 4.7 is all we're going to get and they buy that, and then Apple comes out with a 5.5-inch, say a little bit later when they iron out these production issues, people will go, oh, the buyer's remorse. And they'll go, oh, gee, I wish I had waited for the 5.5. So if this report is true, it imposes some serious sequencing and marketing issues for Apple.
Yeah, I kind of agree with John. I don't think they can, you know, put out two models that closely together. I mean, that's something that the Android market is sort of used to, but with Apple fans and Apple folks, it's, you know, we have a one iPhone a year kind of launch thing. And the rumors have been strong that they're doing these two different versions. You know, I fought against it for a long time, saying, no, they're only going to do a 4.7. But the rumors have become so heavy that there was a 4.7 and a 5.5 that I sort of resolved myself that this was what is going to happen. And I think the most recent things we had been hearing were that both were on track to sort of launch at the same time, or at least be announced at the same time, with launches close to each other, maybe a week apart or something like that. But I don't think Apple could get away with, you know, launching a 4.7 and then 2-3 months later saying, oh, here's a 5.5. And by the way, the 5.5 has optical image stabilizers and, you know, better specs. It's $100 more, but here it is. You know, and I think that you would have a lot of angry customers. It would be tantamount to what happened with the original iPhone pricing, I think, where Apple had to come back and refund a bunch of people.
I think what's happening here is that we hear these little issues in the supply chain, you know, some cosmetic issues, manufacturing issues, getting enough of the right kind of display or whatever, and that kind of percolates out. And then people draw the conclusion that Apple's in trouble and Apple has to delay the launch because of these minor production issues, which would create a serious problem we just talked about. And then what happens is that Apple fixes the problem because they're a very capable manufacturing company, and they go ahead and they launch both at the same time, and we take our pick, and everybody goes, oh, what was all the fuss about? And that's because Apple's so good at fixing these production problems.
Yeah. I think, or it's the alternative where if they can't iron this stuff out, you know, they would have to do the 4.7 now and then maybe make the 5.5 the iPhone 7 next fall or some other form factor design.
Well, does that solve the problem of Apple not having a big enough screen? In other words, everybody's been getting on Apple's case about not having a big enough display. does one single 4.7 solve Apple's problem vis-a-vis Samsung, or does Apple need the 5.5 to be competitive?
I mean, that's a great point. I've kind of resolved myself that they need a larger form factor, and that's why I think we've been hearing about these two sizes. Now, that being said, Apple has a long history of saying, here's the iPhone and here's what it is, take it or leave it. And so I don't think they'd be afraid to take that sort of marketing tactic again and just, if that was what they were going to do. But that alternative of, launching two different size devices 3 months apart, I think that's worse for Apple than them just saying, look, there's a 4.7-inch iPhone. This is our form factor for this year. Take it or leave it. I think it'd be a worse situation if they did this, staggered launch sort of thing for them.
It's too bad Steve Jobs isn't around, because what Steve would say is a 5.5-inch is stupid. And we'll never build one that big, and then next year they'll come out with a 5.5.
I think they would still spin. I think they would still spin it that way. I don't think Apple marketing has changed not that much. Yeah.
I'm not convinced Apple needs a 5.5-inch iPhone.
Yeah, me neither. I never was.
I think a lot of the it has to be bigger stuff is coming from analysts and pundits that are so entrenched in this whole technology thing that they can't see outside of their little bubble. And so in their mind, this is what people need. Therefore, they end up writing articles about how if Apple doesn't do what they think needs to be done, that Apple is doomed. Doomed, I say.
Let me tell you what I think about that. I believe Apple does need a bigger phone, because what happened is that when the 3.5-inch original phone came out, we didn't do a whole lot of stuff on it. There was a very limited vision about what we would do. It was a phone that you could make phone calls on, and you could kind of use it on the internet. And website access was really slow. But as we've grown with the phone, and iOS has grown, and the things we've doing with the phone grows, like Google Maps and and other things, We've naturally had a desire for a bigger display to watch movies and to read books and to look at maps. And I don't think a 5.5 inch is the wrong size for somebody who needs to get a good look at that. I know when sometimes my wife and I are out driving on the interstate and she's trying to look at Google Maps and figure out what the traffic patterns are. She has a hard time looking at the little tiny Google Maps and seeing those areas where there's heavy traffic and stuff like that. So I would love a 5.5-inch phone.
Yet I know people, and so of course this is anecdotal, but I know people that have given up bigger screen Android phones because they'd rather have an iPhone. So the screen size wasn't a critical factor for them. It was the overall user experience that really mattered.
Yeah. I've seen the opposite though as well, Jeff, where I've talked to a lot of folks who maybe aren't totally into technology, and they want the bigger sized phones, and they've bought an Android because they want a 5-inch or 5.5-inch. Now, granted, a lot of those folks also are substituting their phone for a tablet, right? So it's this convergence thing I think that John's talking about. Now, one last point on your point, John, about the car, Apple might turn around and point to you and say, well, we've got CarPlay, and you're going to have a 7-inch display mounted in your dash. So there
in
you go.
In 2018.
Yeah. Well, but again, Apple is one to just say, look, that's what it is. Deal with it.
Yeah, here it is, you ignorant customer. Stick it. Deal with it.
Yeah. Okay, there's another topic that I wanted to hit before we wrap up today. And I suppose for some of our listeners, I just need to let you know, we won't be saying naughty words, but we will be saying, how about anatomically correct words? All right, here's the deal. There is a blogger that decided she wanted to get an iPad, and so she wanted to have the lyrics from a song that she really likes engraved on the back of the iPad. And one of the words that was included in the lyrics is the shortened form of clitoris. And when she filled out the little online engraving thing on the Apple website, she got a warning saying that it was inappropriate wording or inappropriate language, and that she needed to call Apple about that. So then she tried replacing clitoris with vagina, found the same thing, and then starts trying other words, and started to get like really upset when she found that that while words that that define female genitals were not acceptable, but male genitals, including penis and scrotum, were totally acceptable words. And that, and so this was a couple days ago when all this happened. As of this morning, when I sat down and started typing in every word I could think of to describe every part of my body, and probably yours too, dear listeners, there were many words representing male genitals that are now prohibited that weren't last week. So anyhow, after that long-winded explanation, I'm curious what you guys think about this whole thing with Apple deciding what words we can and can't use, and the whole thing with what looks like singling out women's body parts and all of this.
Apple's wrong. Apple's wrong. If you have a medically contemporary proper anatomical term, it's used on television. I'm a big fan of Ferguson. Ferguson exploits that to the hilt. If CBS says it's okay to use medical terminology and anatomically correct language on the air to millions of people, then Apple shouldn't have a problem with those anatomically, medically correct terms at all. I think they're just being weird about it.
I'm maybe not as extreme as John. I mean, I can kind of see why this plays into a little bit of Apple's image and branding, right? Because you've got the Apple logo. Usually the engraving, and correct me if I'm wrong, is on the back, sort of right under the Apple logo. So I think they're particularly sensitive about that. They're a private company. As much as I don't like any kind of censorship, just personally, I can understand why they have these sorts of filters. I think, Jeff, what you mentioned that to me is more disturbing is that they were unfairly censoring those words, right? They yes. need to have a set policy that's equal for all, you know, sort of sets all these words at an equal level rather than one or other. And it sounds like that was just simply maybe a programming mistake or something that was overlooked. And I would hope that was what was going on and there's not more undertones to this. But I don't think there are, especially if they, you know, once it was discovered and sort of exposed, they sounds like they quickly fixed it or corrected it.
That's a programming error, right? Like we lost 2 years worth of emails. Oops, we forgot to have a backup. I don't believe it.
Well, or you just have a bad word filter list.
Oh, I don't believe it. I believe it was intentional, and I believe it was part of the prudishness and Victorian thinking that percolated there, and they didn't really think it through.
And I haven't made up
but
my mind.
But not sex. I mean, are you alleging, sorry, John, are you alleging it was a sexist thing that they were specifically targeting females versus males?
I find it hard to believe that certain words would get through because you go through the process of saying, okay, what are we going to allow and what are we not going to allow? And when you start thinking along those lines, then you sort of have to have an equal partition of it. And the fact that, as Jeff described, certain words were allowed through for males, I think was just sort of a programmer hubris that they just decided to go with and then got called on.
Yeah, this isn't the first time I've gotten ruffled up a little bit about Apple and sexuality. And I haven't decided exactly what I think Apple did here. I'm sorting that out as I work on my piece about all this. But I definitely called Apple out a while ago when they refused to allow an educational app for female masturbation on the App Store, even though there were many other applications that described sexual acts in detail. And
proves my point.
I just find this very, very concerning. If it's a company policy, that's a big problem. If it's individuals in the company, okay, then Apple needs to work on getting people educated as to what's cool and what's not in the way they handle gender and sexuality.
Very good point.
Yeah.
If there were a senior female engineer, can we think of one? who's been up on stage, somebody who's on the software engineering team who says, hey, that's not right. You know, we've got Angela Ahrens, and there's probably some other women in public relations, but what about powerful female executives on the software engineering side?
Not so notable.
I don't know of any. And that might have been part of the problem. There wasn't that kind of overview.
Yeah, well, okay, I would love to keep going on about this because I could so easily soapbox, but we are out of time. So I'm working on a piece about this right now, so feel free to hop into the comments and let me know what you think, and we'll just see where this whole thing goes. So, Adam, thank you for joining me today.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great.
And John, thanks for being a trooper and coming back on yet again.
Absolutely.